Refresh your home today at Menards with window images, blinds, and shades. We have everything you need for updating your window treatments. We carry vinyl, aluminum, and faux wood blinds, cellular shades, and more. Save big on window treatments at Menards. Plus, get them cut to width in-store for free. Visit Menards.com and view our entire selection of window treatments today. Plus, the weekly flyer and other great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's easy to create your dream kitchen with Clearview Cabinetry at Menards. With multiple finishes to choose from, you'll be sure to find a style that fits perfect for you. Clearview Cabinetry offers features like soft closed doors and drawers as standard and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Explore Clearview's cabinet options and start designing today in store or on Menards.com, where you can find more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
And now, without further ado, let's begin.
My body was cold to the touch. Distant sounds of rain patter onto the tent as I slowly awaken from my sleep. I realize that I rested a little longer than usual, so I sit myself up and check the time on my phone. It was 3 a.m. This was my third day of camping, and even though I was excited to go, things felt a little redundant after a while. I noticed that my friend Jessica was not in the tent with me. Maybe she went to the bathroom? There are 15 other campers on the reserve for our field trip. Each tent is relatively close to one another. Our chaperones are in cabins located about 800 feet away. Out of curiosity, I text Jessica. "Where are you, Braceface?" By this time, almost 20 minutes had passed. Something seemed off. I knew she couldn't have been in someone else's tent because she's very particular about the people she's around. Plus, we weren't allowed to do that. Just as I begin to leave the tent, a flash of thunder shocks me in fear as I settle back down. Rain begins to pour down heavily. Jessica's going to be mad that her hair is wet. Assuming that she had went to the bathroom, I fell back to sleep while listening to the rain. After about an hour, I jolt up from my pillow with a noise outside. It was the most disturbing thing I had ever heard. It was blood-curdling and sounded like a banshee. Now at this point, I was concerned. Once again, Jessica still hadn't came back to the tent. I checked my phone and also noticed that she never texted me back. This was strange. It was time to stop being a wuss and get out of the tent. I found it impossible that anyone could have slept through that loud noise, but surprisingly, everyone was sound asleep. I flipped the hood of my jacket onto my head and began walking towards the cabins. I can't explain it exactly, but there was this odd feeling I felt as I continued to walk, almost as if someone was behind me. "I'm overreacting. No one else is out here," is what I say to myself in reassurance. The full moon casted a glare onto the reserve, so I could fairly see where I was going. The rain continued to drench my hoodie and my shoes as I carefully stepped between mud puddles. As I get to the cabin, I noticed something jammed on the side of the entrance. Keep in mind that these cabins are made out of log. I used the force of my foot to knock the object loose, and after a few pushes, the body of a gray cat rolls out. It was dead. I was completely terrified. The only question I had in my head was, who or what would do something like that? It was too much going on at once. I still had to find Jessica, and the turbulence of this weather wasn't making it easy. I try the handle on the door and notice that it's locked, which is alarming, because our chaperone usually left it open for campers to use the restroom in the hall. This just confused me even more as to where Jessica could be. Then, all of a sudden, I take note that the moonlight had completely disappeared. I hear this silent hither of some sort of animal or creature behind me. Whatever it was, I could tell it was a few feet away. My entire body felt ice cold as I faced the cabin door. There was no way I was turning around to see what the thing was. I start to hear footsteps move very slowly in the mud. It grunted in a low tone as it made its way towards me. I could tell this was not the presence of something small. It's time for me to make a move. I bang as loud as I can on the cabin, shouting for help in between knocks. A few moments later, my chaperone opens the door, yawning and squinting in confusion. I quickly move past her and close the door behind me. "You're getting mud all over the floor," says Miss Kelly in agitation. After I catch my breath, I explain to her what was going on, or at least what I thought. Even after going into detail about everything, she responded in a laugh and groggily asked me, did I need to use the bathroom? Well, that was clearly pointless. I take a few moments to get myself together and ask Miss Kelly to walk me back to my tent. She was irritated that I asked, but she agreed to do it anyway. She grabs an umbrella from a closet, and we head back. As I get to my tent and climb inside, I notice that Jessica is laying down. I tap her shoulder and ask her where she was. Apparently, she was in another tent the entire time with a classmate she had a crush on. Midway between us talking, I hear that same blood-curdling scream from earlier. We both sit up and stare at each other in astonishment. Jessica says, "So you've heard it too?" My heart drops to my stomach. "Look, I know we joke a lot, but please just listen to what I'm about to tell you."
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
"You. I have a feeling that's not an animal out there," I explained. Jessica's face had skepticism written all over it. She whispers, "You're not seriously suggesting that there's a ghost or something out there, are you? It's probably one of the girls playing around." "You didn't feel what I felt out there," I say in conviction. "When I was heading to the cabin, there was something behind me, and it didn't sound like a bear, a wolf, or a snake. That was something different." Shortly after, we continue to discuss what's going on. We decide to just head back to sleep until morning. Even with her hearing the noise herself, she refused to believe me. It made me question my own reality. Am I crazy? I woke up the next morning to the sound of distant voices talking in a frenzy. Jessica and I climb out of the tent and head to the bonfire a few feet up ahead. Mostly everyone, including our chaperone, was outside in a circle around the burning ember. "Have a seat, guys," says Miss Kelly as she takes a deep sigh. "I'm assuming you two have no clue where Michael and Kenny are, do you?" Jessica and I look at each other in confusion. "No, I haven't seen them. What exactly is going on?" I respond in curiosity. "Just an hour ago, I went to check on everybody before I began roll call. They weren't in their tents, and I have no idea what's going on. Listen, if this is a joke, guys, you gotta stop this. I have to..." Suddenly, out of nowhere, Michael and Kenny stumble out of the woods and onto the ground in exhaustion. Their eyes were bloodshot red. We all rush over to console them both and ask what happened. They would say a few words, but it was mostly gibberish. Michael had no shirt on, and Kenny's white shirt was covered in dirt. They looked completely terrified. All right, this camping adventure is officially over. I don't get paid enough for this, Miss Kelly shouts in agitation. Please don't say I told you so, says Jessica as we walk back to our tent. When I wished for a memorable trip, this wasn't what I had in mind. For many years, 53-year-old Robert Wilson was employed at pharmaceutical manufacturer Thornton Ross in Huddersfield, over in the UK. He worked the night shift, in charge of site security, and he was good at his job, too. During his tenure at Thornton Ross, there hadn't been a single break-in or incident of vandalism, and he was well on his way to a promotion of head of security. Robert had suffered some serious misfortune in his time and was forced to change careers several times during his life. But for the first time in a long time, everything was going well for him, and it seemed his luck was finally beginning to turn. Yet, a chance encounter with two teenage boys early last year was all it took to bring his whole world crashing down. At approximately 11 p.m. on January 16th, 2020, Robert was watching the CCTV monitors in the site's security office when he noticed two shadowy figures wandering around the facility's parking lot. Robert gathered up a colleague by the name of John Badejo, along with another security officer, and the trio went to investigate. There they found that the two shadowy figures were nothing more than young boys in the form of 16-year-old Luke Gockroger and 19-year-old Kieran Earnshaw, and that the two boys seemed to be very drunk. When confronted as to why they were roaming around the parking lot so late at night, the boys appeared apologetic at first, explaining that they had merely attempted to navigate a shortcut through the facility, but that one of them had managed to drop their phone in the process. Being the compassionate soul that he was, Robert agreed to help the boys find the missing cell phone. He also knew that the quicker he could help them find the phone, the quicker they would be out of his hair. Robert took out his own phone, turning on the flashlight to help illuminate the dark parking lot so the group would be able to find the missing phone. In doing so, he happened to accidentally shine the flashlight in one of the teenagers' directions. Kieran Earnshaw, in his drunken state, assumed this was because Robert was making a video recording of him and demanded he turn the phone off. Confused, Robert assured Kieran that he was simply using the flashlight feature, but Kieran didn't believe him and angrily demanded that he stop. At this point, harsh words were exchanged between the two, and a confrontation arose, but Robert could have never expected what would follow. Kieran reached into his tracksuit pants and produced an actual sword from them. Apparently, it was intended to be nothing more than a decorative ornament, but Kieran had taken the time to sharpen it and apply grip tape to the handle, turning what should have been a charming adornment into a deadly weapon. He began to attack Robert Wilson with the sword, slashing and striking him with it over and over again. Robert raised his right hand to defend himself, and the strike that followed was said to sever four of his fingers at once. John Badejo watched in horror as his colleague's bloody fingers tumbled to the tarmac below and rushed to his defense. But Kieran was quick and saw John's approach out of the corner of his eye. He turned, swinged the sword hard in his direction, slicing through the thick fabric of his jacket and sending sharpened steel plunging into his flesh. John Badejo backed off, clenching at the fresh wound, while Kieran turned his attentions back to Robert Wilson, who by that point was attempting to crawl away, mortally wounded. Kieran began hacking away at him again. As Robert's colleagues fled the scene, the blood-curdling scream of their wounded friend echoing around the parking lot as they ran. Kieran's friend, Luke, then joined the attack, pulling out a knife from his jacket and began to stab the fallen Robert over and over again, until he screamed no more. CCTV footage had managed to capture every second of the attack from start to finish, and the two teenagers were quickly tracked down and arrested by the West Yorkshire Police. Under advice from their defense attorneys, both pled guilty to Robert's murder. Kieran Earnshaw was sentenced to life. Luke Gockroger was sentenced to a minimum term of 16 years and 17 days. Kieran also pleaded guilty to inflicting serious bodily harm on the second victim, John Badejo, and Luke pleaded guilty to the possession of an offensive weapon. James Goddard of Britain's Crown Prosecution Service said that this was a ferocious and frenzied attack on an innocent man who was simply carrying out his duties. The two teenagers inflicted a horrific level of violence on Mr. Wilson, as well as seriously injuring Mr. Badejo. The two defendants are now facing significant jail sentences. Our thoughts remain with Mr. Wilson's family and friends as they have been throughout. When questioned by investigating police, Kieran Earnshaw was apparently unable to provide any legitimate reason as to why he was carrying a sword. He claimed it was for self-defense, but when pressed on who he was seeking to defend himself from, he had no response except to shrug. The only conclusion that we can draw is that Kieran was carrying that sword because he wished to use it on another human being, and he was not particularly fussy on who that might be. There is every chance that Kieran knew that Robert Wilson wasn't recording him that night, and that he simply chose to feign outrage so that he had an excuse to take out that sword and end a man's life. Kieran had been out drinking that day for hours on end and was apparently carrying that sword with him the whole time, but he opted to use it at night, possibly because it was the only time he was drunk enough to do so. Yet, is there not something about the dark of the night that brings out the most predatory and violent side of a man? So the point remains, if Robert Wilson had been working the day shift, if he had been safely inside his own home when the sun had gone down, he might still be alive today.
Thank you for joining us on this captivating journey. If you found this exploration as enthralling as we did, please like, share, and subscribe.